Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living Solution with Dr. Elena George. With all of the COVID situation that's been going on for the last several months, I think, you know, we've had a real coming to awareness moment about where we're supposed to be. You know, I think everybody's been home. They've had a chance to take stock. And whether you own a business or you work for somebody, I think people are thinking more about what their future holds. I certainly have. And I think our guest is an expert, actually, and I want to ask him what we need to prepare for, because I don't think what the media is telling us is really, I wouldn't say the truth. I don't want to be that inflammatory, but we need to take stock of what's important to us, not what they tell us should be important. And today we have Mr. Andrew Shechtman on. He's a prominent figure in the financial services industry for more than 25 years, during which he served as the president and owner of Miles Franklin Precious Metals Limited. Prior to starting Miles Franklin in 1989, he became a licensed financial planner, specializing in Swiss franc investments and alternative investments. At Miles Franklin, a company that recently eclipsed $5 billion in sales, he's developed an operation that maintains trust, collaboration, ethical behavior, superior customer service and satisfaction to better serve their clients. He's responsible for overseeing the firm's operations and business functions, including strategic planning, account management, finance, and new business. He has distinguished himself as a successful entrepreneur, a foremost expert in the precious metals industry, and a reputable speaker on economic, global investing, and foreign currencies. And Mr. Shechtman, I want to really welcome you to the show, because we're in a position now that they're throwing money at us if we're fortunate enough to get it and keep our businesses open. But I don't think anything's for free. So when we're talking about millions and billions of dollars just, you know, given out, what's going to be the upshot of that? You know, are we really going to be able to get back on our feet? And is our economy teetering, or is it really on the comeback?
Well, first of all, thank you, Dr. George, for having me on the show. I appreciate it very much. I'm honored to be part of what you're doing. What's happening right now is certainly unprecedented in this country in terms of the amount of money that has been created and thrown at the problem of a deflationary wave settling down upon the Keynesian-based economic system that is the United States. Really, that is the Western world. In economics, there are two schools of thought. There is, and I kind of equate it to the Three Little Pigs story, the brick house would be the Austrian school of economics, and where you have an economy built upon savings, investment, and reinvestment. That's how you build a really strong, stable economy, one that is built upon a foundation of savings and investment. Unfortunately, the West has followed the Keynesian school of economics. That is, expansion comes through debt and servicing of that debt through consumption and spending. So there's a blanket of debt that stands on top of this economy that is serviceable, that you can expand and create wealth and create investment when times are good through spending and consumption. When you all at once shut down all of the consumption and spending across the globe, certainly in the Western world, you have a problem. And that is a blanket of debt that descends upon the economy, and that's really what we're seeing right now. The amount of money, as you pay reference to, that has been created with a keystroke, which has its own discussion based upon ethics and morals and what have you, but a keystroke, no sweat from a brow was used to create the tremendous amount of money that has been created in the past 10 months, shall we say, since I would say since September of last year when this problem really started. And I know you're alluding to COVID, but to me, this goes back to September of 2019 with the repo market absolutely blew up, which is the overnight lending between the banks. But since that time, the Federal Reserve in the past 10 months has created well north of $4 trillion, and that doesn't even include what the Treasury has created. And when you realize that it took 300 years in this country to create $800 billion of wealth, for the Federal Reserve to create with several keystrokes north of $4 or $5 trillion in 10 months, and more succinctly, $2.5 or $3 trillion over the past 10 weeks, those numbers have become mind-boggling. And, you know, I don't think people often give enough credit to just how big those numbers really are because, well, I think it's reasonable to expect to make $1 million in a lifetime. If you have, if you're middle class, you probably could make $1 million over a lifetime, and certainly that's obtainable. $1 billion, well, there's lots of billionaires nowadays, so $1 trillion can't be that much, right? Well, $1 trillion seconds ago was 31,688 years ago. So if you made a machine that printed dollar bills every second without stopping to reload ink or change paper, it would take you 31,688 years to create $1 trillion. And so these numbers are beyond big. And when you realize that they were created at the lowest interest rates in human civilization, it only becomes scarier. Mm-hmm. In 2008, when the Federal Reserve expanded its balance sheet to solve the problem, the credit problem, the crashing market problem when Lehman and Bear went under, they were buying at the height of that. I believe the figure was somewhere around $80 billion of bonds per month to keep interest rates low and keep the market going. Here in March, just a few weeks ago, the Federal Reserve was buying an astounding $75 billion worth of treasuries a day, per day. The amount of money that was created out of thin air certainly has sowed the seeds for a hyperinflationary scenario. And I would argue that we haven't seen anything yet. You know, when you talk about the actions that had gone to help the public, I point to a confluence of events that are going to all come together here this fall, starting in July. In July, the $600 that we used to pay people to not go back to work, part of the CARES package, mm-hmm. that starts to wear off. And the $1,200 that they gave every man, woman, and child who made under $400,000, well, that comes to an end here in July. That starts to wear off, as does the payroll protection program for the small businesses who were using that money to pay rent and employees, but they've been closed for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the bottom line is that, no, I don't think we're even remotely out of the woods yet. And I know that it's human nature to, you know, to want a hope spring eternal type of mentality. But I honestly don't believe we have seen anything yet. And I'm concerned about where we head from here. I guess when you take a look at the interest rates right now at, you know, 0.8% on the 10-year, who in their right mind would buy treasuries from a insolvent country who's creating inflation, who's trying to lend to you money, or I should say, you're trying to get paid for lending money? Who would lend money to an insolvent entity where inflation runs abound at 0.8% over 10 years? Nobody would. And when you look at the federal funds rate, which is the futures market, is predicting that by January, we go into negative interest rates on the federal funds rate. So when you draw it out into the future, the Federal Reserve has two choices. Either they continue to monetize, which creates inflation. In other words, at 0% interest, if the futures traders are right and we hit negative interest rates or 0% by January. If that be the case, who in their right mind would buy a 10-year treasury at 0% interest when inflation is running at high levels? Mm-hmm. And it is running at high levels, and it will run at even higher levels when the money starts to work its way out of the system. But the bottom line is nobody. So the Federal Reserve is the only person or the only entity that will do that. And so there are two choices. Either they continue to monetize, which creates inflation, which ultimately will raise interest rates, or they back away. And they stop, and then no one buys it, which in and of itself raises interest rates, which heads us towards a depression, a severe depression. And quite frankly, that's kind of what Fed Chairman Powell said today in his remarks, that the GDP will fall by 50% in the second quarter. That is the definition squarely of a depression. So I don't know what to tell you other than to say I don't think we're out of the woods yet. We have a long way to go to even come back to a semblance of a normal economy.
Well, on that note, let's take our first break so we can actually think about that a little bit. You're Living in the Solution. Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Shechtman. He is the owner of the Miles Franklin Precious Metals Limited. And before the break, I think you gave a really, I guess, sobering and a complete answer to where we are right now. There's so many cheerleaders on the side of what we did, and there's people who I can't really trust because I know that they just want to get back in. So are they painting the worst case scenario? So I think you really gave a nice synopsis of economics, not politics. And I think that's where we're all kind of getting stuck in this emotional washing machine of push-pull on this thing. So if you, I hope you, it'd be nice if you did run everything, but if you could run stuff and you could get us out of this or start us moving in the right direction, because what you said before the break, obviously continuing to pile the debt is not the answer. And I'll ask a corollary to that. Is there some movement towards doing that so that we can break the system and reset it? So which is it? Is it because people really don't know what they're doing, or because they're trying to put the system in such a way that we have no choice but we have to fix this?
Well, I would argue the can has been kicked so frequently and so far down the road, we are at an inflection point where I don't know if it's even fixable any longer, because we talk about beginning of the year, we had a $22 trillion debt that has expanded to somewhere in the neighborhood of $26 trillion just in the course of the last few months. That doesn't take into account Medicare or Medicaid. Social Security is $55 trillion underfunded. So our unfunded liabilities are exceeding, by the government's own admission, north of $120 trillion, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, government, military pensions. When we talk about asset base, we're a country that has, when you factor in the 8,000 tons of gold that we have supposedly at Fort Knox, when you factor in the land that we have from coast to coast, the military, all of that combined doesn't even equal $2 trillion. When you add the largest asset as proclaimed by the Treasury Department, you may want to throw up when I tell you what that is, but the largest single asset as declared by the Treasury Department is now student debt. Student debt sounds like a liability, but it's not, because they passed a law that says even if you file bankruptcy or die, your heirs will inherit it. They'll attach your Social Security payments. They'll find a way to get it. You cannot get out of it. It is considered the largest single asset of the United States. Put all together, our total asset base is under $4 trillion. We are a banana republic in sorts. We are insolvent and with no asset base. Now, if you wanted to really fix things, the first thing that I would suggest people would do would be immediately the country to cut every program by 10%, every single one across the board. No questions asked. And if you didn't want to cut one program by 10, then you cut another one by 20. The bottom line is you have to stop the bleeding. And you cut every program by 10%, and then you do not spend any more for 3 or 4 years, period. No, not even taking into account the cost of the adjusted cost of inflation and living, just to get a hold of our reckless spending. We're so far indebted that at some point, what really makes me concerned is that at some point, when the market catches on to the fact that the Federal Reserve has created inflation through monetization of assets, and you have an insolvent government that is borrowing massive amounts of money with inflation, I think that you have a big problem. And that problem is that no one's going to want to lend to us any longer and be paid back in watered down currency. So, yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I think we're almost too far down the road, which leads me to believe that the reaction globally to the coronavirus actually perhaps had a purpose. Now, I don't want to stray too far down the conspiratorial road, but I'll simply say this. The only way you destroy or blow up a Keynesian-based economy without killing every person, man, woman, and child on the planet and starting over is keep them from spending and consuming. And then the debt crushes them all at the same time. And then you have your debt jubilee where all debt is forgiven. Now, could that happen? Possibly. Is that why this was orchestrated this way? I don't know. But I will tell you this, that without spending and consumption, a Keynesian-based economy that is built upon a mountain of debt quickly crumbles. And so I don't know where this ultimately leads, but I'll tell you the first thing that has to be done is the spending has to stop, spending more than we make. And I guess, look, at some point, if your household spends so much more money than they make each year, at some point you have to stop or you go completely and totally bankrupt. The only difference is that the U.S. government has the ability to print. And at some point, that has to stop and we run into big problems. But at this point, when you look at the amount of money that is being spent, far exceeding what we're taking in tax revenue, it is it's a game that's going to lead to some very, very sobering hard times for this country. And if I had to guess, we are heading into what I would call hyperstagflation. And that's when hyperinflation meets a Great Depression. And in that environment, it's the worst of all outcomes in that it's rapidly rising prices characterized by little or no economic growth. That is not a good and friendly environment. So if we don't change our ways quickly, it's going to be much, much worse in terms of the severity of the outcome.
I have a question for you about going back in a way to the last bailout. And, you know, I'm not an economic major, I'm a biology major, but it struck me back in the day when they had all these derivatives that the banks foisted all that on us instead of taking responsibility for debt that they had ginned up in their casino. If that's the case, why can't we just say, like, I think Iceland did, right? They said, we're not paying this, this isn't our debt, we're not doing it. And they took a little heat, but is there something that we can do in terms of if we didn't own it, you know, if we didn't make it, why are we responsible for it?
Well, not only that, and that's a great question, but I'll take it a step further. In 2011, do you know that the U.S. passed legislation that would allow regulators to freeze bank accounts and use them to bail in financial institutions and banks? That they also passed laws that would allow them to close the gates, as it's called, on investment funds or money markets to stop people from getting their money out. They even can impose wealth taxes and seize unused assets. I'm going to answer that question a different way and simply say, when I watched the election this last year, or this last election rather, I was less surprised by Trump winning and more surprised and troubled by the fact that Bernie Sanders almost, beat Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And we are heading towards a period of time where we're heading down a socialist agenda. Socialist agenda is taking over. And so, in terms of how this plays out, I think the people with money will be the target. And as far as on a macro scale, look, if I were the banks, and I'm sure they're continuing to do the same thing. They get bailed out. Mm-hmm. They have all of these highly leveraged debt investments, and they get bailed out. They're taken away by the Fed. They're paid money for it, and then they continue to do the same thing. And I guess I would too if I were them. If I had that mindset,
right.
Just front running the next wave of government bailouts is basically what they're doing. I just think that until things change, these institutions have been given precedent, a green light to speculate with taxpayer money, make untold fortunes, and then be bailed out when things go south by the banks. There's really not a lot we can do. The government bailing them out, rather, there's not a lot we can do at this point other than revolt. And I think that's kind of what, in a weird sort of way, you were seeing by some of the riots that we saw here in Minneapolis. I know it took the image of police brutality and what have you, but it's pent up aggression between a massive disparity between those who have money and those who don't, between rich and poor, and it's growing. It's growing at a massive rate. That disparity is growing, and it's going to create big, big problems. So, no, I don't think there's anything really that we can do about it at this point. In fact, the laws are tailored specifically so that it can only get worse and more money taken from the public through bail-ins, and through the closing or eliminating the ability to leave money markets. There's a lot to be desired for what outcome could actually happen as things get much worse here.
Well, I think we're going to take our next break, and I absolutely agree with you about the, this veering towards the left. But from my reading and experiencing this, those who think that if the government takes over, they're going to distribute the wealth evenly, I don't think that's going to be the case. They'll just be those who are more equal than others, and the people who have something, the status quo, I think would remain the same, except we'd all be paying a heck of a lot more in taxes and getting a lot less. That's how I see it. And it's certainly that way from a healthcare perspective. On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Andy Schechtman, and he's the president of Miles Franklin Precious Metals. This is such an interesting time to live in. You're living a nightmare in a lot of ways, but they're telling you from both sides of the political coin that that they have the answer. But either doubling down on what we're doing now or going to a system that historically doesn't economically work, it seems like we have to have our own solution. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, because it's not about them telling us anything anymore. We need to handle our own business. And I had a guest on a few weeks ago said it, become your own bank, which you need to control your economic destiny. And from what you're describing, having a job, owning a business, being in debt is not a recipe for having a successful retirement.
Oh, absolutely. No, but it's the American way. No one owns anything anymore, Dr. George. You have student debt record. You have record auto debt, record credit card debt. Everyone has a mortgage it's no one owns anything outright anymore. And so debt is really, I guess, inbred. It's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get married. You're supposed to take out a mortgage and buy a car or two and amass credit card debt to buy the ring to propose to your wife and on and on and on, and create student debt when your children go to school. My son goes to the University of Michigan. It costs $70,000 a year to send my son to a Big Ten university. And when people talk about inflation, there is inflation. It's in places that not everybody sees, but certainly college tuition is one of those places where we see inflation. And so, yeah, I think that that is not so much the way to do it. And you're right, you should become your own bank. One of the things that they say about precious metals is gold and silver are one of the only, if not the only, assets on the planet that are not simultaneously someone else's liability. So having no counterparty risk between you and your funds is always important, I think, especially as counterparty risk is going to become more and more of an issue as things start to blow up, especially derivative problems start to blow up. But I guess I'd like to quantify or clarify that and simply say that for me, gold and silver are not an investment. It's wealth. It's been wealth for 6,000 years. Kings, queens, emperors, all the way back to biblical times, pharaohs. No one ever called their gold dealer to buy gold back then. It has been a form of immutable wealth passed on for generations. So when I started this company 30 years ago with my father, I was 19 years old. And he said to me, look, there'll be one rule and only one rule. We'll do this together. If you deviate from that one rule, I'll fire you. Short of that, there's nothing you can do wrong. I said, well, geez, I can live by that. What's that rule? And he said, you'll buy something every 2 weeks, period. We'll learn this business together, as we did. We're somewhat the embodiment of the American dream. Our company comes from nothing. Our family comes from nothing. And yet we just eclipsed $6 billion in transactions without a customer complaint. I'm the president of the company. I own 51%. He will not fire me any longer. He's still alive. But I've honored that promise. And for 30 years, every 2 weeks, I've bought something without fail. Never missed a two-week period. Over 1,000 transactions. Never missed a two-week period. And to me, it's not an investment. It is my wealth that I hope I never need to use. And if I do, I'm damn glad I have it. And if not, my children will inherit. And there are very few things that I know that my great-great-great-grandchildren could use when the dollar bills that once were are hanging from a museum in the Smithsonian. But I do know that the gold and silver that has been wealth for 6,000 years will be wealth in the year 3,000, too. And so to become your own bank, to divest yourself somewhat of the system, to be outside the grid, to have historical wealth in unprecedented, frightening times, I think has never been more important. I'm not selling gold and silver as an investment. I am offering it as wealth, as a way to protect yourself. The fact that the Federal Reserve and the United States government has two options, either to inflate or to default. And as the late great mentor of mine, Richard Russell, said, Federal Reserve, and he was saying this 20 years ago, the Federal Reserve should have one mantra at that point. He was saying, inflate or die. Well, like inflate or default is the same thing. So we're heading to a time and a place where preservation of capital will be far more important than return on. In other words, return of your money should be your primary focus rather than return on. And I think where we're heading, he or she who loses least will win. Yeah. And that's where I honestly believe we are headed.
I happen to agree with you wholeheartedly on that. And, you know, we just spent the last couple segments really laying the groundwork for why you need to think outside the box. Because if we're in stagflation and you're not really making higher wages and everything's going up and your money's in the stock market, which, well, let me answer that question. Should you have your money in the stock market? Is it something that you think you can, if you have enough, if you're young enough, you can ride it out, or you should just get something tangible and create your wealth yourself?
I would say to you that first of all, the stock market, the value of the stocks as a proportion of the underlying economy, which to me is really the only metric that matters, it's never, ever, ever, ever been more expensive, ever. Google just published something the other day that said in their entire history, they had more hits, I don't know how you say this, inquiries on how to buy stocks than ever before. So basically, you have all of these novices now wanting to buy stocks. At that point, I'm going the other way. I'm selling stocks. I'm getting out. Let me put you this way. The only thing, in my opinion, keeping the stock market up right now, the only thing is interest rates at or near zero, enabling corporations to borrow money and to, at next to nothing, go into the open market, buy stocks, buy their shares back, levy the prices. I think when the Fed steps away, when interest rates rise, that game is over. And, you know, you're talking right now the highest valuations by every single metric ever in history at a time when 40 million people just lost their jobs. Something doesn't smell right. You have the Federal Reserve buying up the market. They're keeping it afloat. They're propping it up. It's like in the Bank of Japan that owns 75% of the Japanese Nikkei. We are heading to a time where stock market is not a reflection of the underlying economy, not even in a little bit. And I think that this cannot last forever. We have an election coming. They're trying to maintain a perception of reality. It's called MOPE, Management of Perception Economics. But I have a bridge to sell you if you believe that the stock market should be, after Chairman Powell just came out and said the second quarter GDP numbers are down over 50%, putting us in a depression. If you believe that the stock market should be right back where it was before all this stuff happened with COVID, if you think that's normal, I got a bridge to sell you. I think that this is all highly manipulative. And in fact, I just read the other day that Bank of America just published, Bank of America today confirmed that the trend of smart money selling stocks, in other words, they're saying that their private high net worth clients have sold stocks for 7 consecutive weeks in a row. So you have the big money that has been selling. Now, I'll tell you my perspective as a precious metals company, how I believe that to be true. All the easy money that was created since 2008 by the Fed intervening and expanding their balance sheets has gone into asset price inflation, stocks, bonds, and real estate. In my career, typically the phone call would go something like this. Now, remind you, I've done this for 30 years, and the phone call would go something like this. Hi, Andy. I'm friends with Dr. George. Her and I have coffee together, and we go on walks. And, well, for the past 4 years, she's been telling me I should buy gold. And, geez, I should have listened to her. Well, listen, I have a huge account at UBS. I have $3 million there. I'm going to give you 10% of that. I'd like to put $300,000, or maybe I'd like to put $30,000. Whatever it is, I want 10% of my assets in gold, or maybe 5%. And that was always the conversation. And never did we get the client who would call and say, I want to put much more money in, a larger percentage of my assets. Well, when I, in March, when we were seeing the stock market move up 1,000, down 1,000, up 1,000, down 1,000, that to me is exactly what's happening. You had the Federal Reserve buying it, pushing it up 1,000. The down 1,000 were the baby boomers who had a spiritual experience in March watching 40% of their assets disintegrate, their retirement disintegrate. And so now we get phone calls that go like this. Andy, I've been walking with Dr. George for the past 4 years. I should have listened to her. I just pulled $3 million out of the stock market. I would like to make this large order. Now, what I'm saying is we have no order minimum, first of all. I'm not trying to paint this picture that we're an elitist company that only works with wealthy people. We have no order minimum. We work with every single class of client, from someone who wants to spend $200 to someone who wants to spend $2 million. My point to you in this exercise is that, in a very roundabout answer, is that I believe that the big money is pulling out of the stock market. Normally, they would go to the bond market because stocks and bonds are inversely correlated, but they're not inversely correlated anymore. With interest rates at the lowest level in human history, if they rise, if interest rates go up, it crushes the mother of all bubbles, the bond market, but it also cuts off at the head the stock market. No one would invest in stocks at their highest valuation in history with interest rates rising when you could buy treasuries or something like it that pay 7 or 8 or whatever percent with a modicum of safety. And so the bottom line is rising interest rates would kill the stock bond market and the real estate market all at once. And so people are pulling out of these highly inflated assets that they've had over the last 8 years in equities, courtesy of the Fed, and they're coming into precious metals. And that has created price inflation in my industry at a time when the supply chain has been fractured through COVID, where 60% of the silver mines and 50% of the gold mines were shut down most of the year, when most of the refineries in Switzerland, which border Italy, were closed down most of the year, when the United States and the Canadian Mint were both shut down for extended periods of time. A fractured supply chain with massive interest from the public, unlike anything I've ever seen in 30 years, has created price inflation in this industry, where you have more and more money chasing fewer goods. It's exactly what's going to happen in the real economy when this money spills out that the Fed has now created in trillions to keep things going. When that money finds its way out into the economy, we will see the same thing. Massive amounts of money chasing fewer goods and services as depressionary, deflationary, stagflation environment, I think, abounds. And I want it to be known that I am not a pessimist. I know it sounds it's sobering, the things that I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the most optimistic person you'll ever meet in so many ways. But I think we've painted ourselves into a very dark corner, one that if you don't think outside the box, if you do not mitigate your exposure to the United States dollar, if you do not mitigate your exposure to the stock and the bond market and take control of your finances, you will regret it. I believe this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to protect yourself and a once-in-a-generation event that will wipe out a lot of people who believe that the road to retirement is only paved with stock certificates and mutual funds. I really do.
I happen to agree with you. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Andy Scheckman. Before the break, we were talking about a sobering fact that we really need to honestly think outside the box, because doing the same thing, expecting a different result, is really not going to work. And I have a feeling from what you just said, there's a cohort of our population who now think, hey, now I should get in because I'm going to make money. And this potentially could be another transfer of wealth in a weird way. Let's talk about how we as individuals can take our power back. You talked a lot about precious metals. Let's talk about nuts and bolts. People should go to your website, milesfranklin.com. It's excellent information, up-to-date numbers on the value of the various precious metals, gold, silver, palladium, and platinum. And there's blogs on here that really give a nice meat weight about how you should think about the process going forward. And I'm looking at one of the pages, and it's talking about silver being kind of undervalued. And this is the time that if you had to pick one thing, you should probably think about getting into that, because it has the potential to jump exponentially. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, silver, I believe, is the most undervalued asset on the planet. And I don't say that flippantly. I think it deserves a little bit of a ramp up and introduction to why I say that. First of all, in 2008, when Bear Stearns failed, J.P. Morgan inherited Bear Stearns' short position in silver. There is an interview out there that I think your listeners would be well served to listen to. It would be Chris Marcus, Bart Chilton interview. Chris Marcus runs Arcadia Economics and he interviewed Bart Chilton, who was the head of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. CFTC is a commodity police. And he said all of this publicly on Chris's show, admitted that he, as the head of the CFTC, told his superiors that J.P. Morgan, who took this position and was given a period of time to pare down the short position because they were in violation of commodity law trading limits, that they went to his superiors and said they're in violation of it. They, in fact, didn't shorten it. They extended it. They are now way in violation. They should be prosecuted. And they weren't prosecuted because, as he was told, it was a political decision. Now, he had only given this information publicly once. He died of a heart attack a week later, a mysterious one at that. And for the past 12 years, J.P. Morgan has been the largest short position on the COMEX market, in the history of the COMEX market, in silver. At the same time, they have amassed 1 billion ounces of physical silver. That's 10 times what the Hunt brothers tried to buy. About 6 or 8 or 9 months ago, the Justice Department shocked the world and issued 6 federal indictments against J.P. Morgan Precious Metals, racketeering charges, RICO charges, and an ongoing investigation for manipulating the price of gold and silver. Miraculously, as of last month, J.P. Morgan, for the first time in 12 years, is now net long in silver. In other words, they stopped holding down the price with leverage futures contracts and now are taking the other side of the trade after they have amassed the singular largest position the world has ever seen, ever, in silver. They are now going net long on paper. Now, I would assume it's a byproduct of this investigation that the Justice Department is still ongoing with. But the bottom line is that when you look at a ratio between gold to silver, we can go back thousands of years and see a 16-to-1 ratio, going back thousands of years since the beginning of time. In fact, geologically, it's 15.5 times more abundant than gold. About a month ago, it was 120-to-1. That's the most out of whack it's ever been, ever in human history. Over the past month and a half, silver has risen by over 60%, from $12 to where we are now, maybe about 50% anyway. It at one point was up closer to 60, but the point of it is that it is slingshotting. Mm-hmm. It is moving. It's now about 95-to-1. That ratio is still out of whack. The bottom line is simply this. You have the most sophisticated, well-funded, well-informed investors on the planet, J.P. Morgan, nefarious at that, but have amassed 10 times what the Hunt brothers tried to own, the singular largest physical position of silver the world has ever seen, ever. And I think that speaks to the long game for silver. But I'd also like to mention one thing about gold for your listeners. And I can't understand why I'm one of the only people talking about this, because I haven't heard it anywhere else, quite frankly. But I consider it to be the singular biggest event of my career. For 30 years, nothing even comes close to this. I would say J.P. Morgan going long in the silver market's a close second. And I say that to you in all sincerity, that silver should be much, 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 much higher. Just based upon the 42-to-1 ratio of the last 150 years, silver should be about $39 an ounce right now. In other words, that ratio is 16-to-1. And what's coming out of the ground right now is about 8 or 9-to-1, because silver is found in nature in something called epithermal. It's found very close to the surface. Most of the low-lying silver deposits were found many, many, many years ago. But anyways, what J.P. Morgan has done would be a close second to the singular largest, biggest event of my career happened last April. And that was the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, reclassifying. And that's, by the way, the central banker's central bank. That's the top of the food chain in central bank land. They reclassified gold as the only other tier one asset in the world next to U.S. dollars and treasuries. Since Bretton Woods in 1944, there's been one tier one asset on the planet that central banks would use when they would trade with one another. That was U.S. treasuries and dollars. Gold was always a tier three asset. So the fact that out of nowhere, last April, the central banks reclassified gold as the only other tier one asset in the world. In 2017, they were net sellers. At the end of 2017, all of a sudden, the central banks started buying. In 2018, they bought more gold as a group than they did in the 60 years combined previously. Last year, 2019, that trend continued up 90% from 2018. Massive amounts they're buying. In April, they then reclassified as the only other tier one asset on the planet. And they continue to accumulate the heck out of it here now. And so if I had to guess, here's my long game guess. The dollar blows up. Gold is reclassified as a tier one asset. We know that it'll be the underpinning to some degree, a percentage. It won't be convertible, meaning you can't go back to a bank and trade it for an ounce of gold, but it will have a gold backing. And I believe, as Nancy Pelosi came out last month and in her House Subcommittee Finance bill calling for a digital dollar, you keep seeing it more and more and more. Federal Reserve, I believe, has met with or has discussed using Ethereum as the rails for the new LIBOR market to put a little bit of authenticity into a market that's been manipulated. The bottom line is I believe we're heading towards a digital currency, one that will be backed by gold now that they reclassified it. And if that be the case, gold will go to levels that people can't think possible, and it will never come back down. It will be pegged to a new system. Gold and silver have a 90% correlation since the beginning of time. Gold will not go to the moon without silver coming along for it. So the bottom line is that they're both really good choices. Gold is more wealth. Silver is wealth, but with rocket fuel. It's gold on steroids. And at the ratio we have right now, roughly 95, 100 to 1, I would say that it is probably the best investment. Now, I said earlier, it's wealth, not an investment. Mm-hmm. But when you can buy silver at historically, literally, it hasn't been this high, but once or twice in human history, in terms of its relationship to gold, that is an anomaly. It is a screaming opportunity. And when that ratio, let's say someone put $100,000 into silver today at 100-to-1 ratio, roughly, when that ratio falls back to 42 or 3 to 1, which has been the average for the last 150 years, mind you, my friend Keith Neumeyer, who runs one of the largest silver companies in the world, First Majestic, tells me what's coming out of the ground is 8 to 1 right now. So it could even go lower than 40 to 1. But if it went from 100 to 1 to 40 to 1, you could take that silver that you bought today, trade it to gold, and get 2.5 times the amount of gold you could otherwise buy today. It gives you the ability to play the ratio. Mm-hmm. Buy the undervalued silver, trade it into gold when the ratio normalizes, and move back and forth. In other words, anytime the ratio gets above 80, which has only happened a half a dozen times in history, you go into silver. And whenever the ratio goes below 40, you go back to gold. And so lots of opportunities in silver, uncharacteristically strong opportunities at that, Dr. George.
Wow, that was a real, thank you for that primer. I'm looking forward to contacting you myself. And just, we're at the end of the show, how can people reach you and get your expertise?
Sure. So before I mention that, I would like to say that where we're located in Minnesota, and I'm going to pat myself on the back. I'm not meaning to. I just want you to know it's important to understand, first and foremost, we've been doing this for a very long time, 30 years, and we've never had a customer complaint in $6 billion in transactions, ever. You can look online, you won't find one. A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and one of only 24 companies in the world that have ever been approved by the United States Mint. Now, that should make me feel good as the owner of a company, but it does. But the state of Minnesota doesn't care. State of Minnesota, where I'm located, is the only state in the United States that regulates this federally non-regulated industry. It's the Wild West. In other words, if someone wrongs you, you have very little, if any, recourse, unless that company, of course, is in the state of Minnesota. State of Minnesota, you have to post a very large surety bond on top of annualized background checks of every employee and personnel, myself included, and continuing education and compliance that no one else in the industry has to abide by. Therefore, almost every one of my competitors that are online will boycott Minnesota. When you go online to buy from them and click your zip code, they'll say, pick another state. We won't send it to you. They would need to be subservient to the regulations we are put forth by the Commissioner of Commerce in the state of Minnesota. What it means succinctly, Dr. George, is your listeners buying from us would receive the safest transactions in the United States, bar none. And so, for your listeners, I will make an offer, and I will keep that offer good for the remainder of the month. If they email me at andy@milesfranklin, now mind you, you can get our daily newsletter signing up for it at milesfranklin.com. But if they email me specifically at andy@milesfranklin with Dr. George in the subject line, I will guarantee, to beat any online price in the United States for the remainder of the month for your listeners. If they email me, I will respond to them or one of my dedicated brokers personally, one of us will, within 24 hours, if not much, much sooner. And that would be a nice way for us to kick things off, at least in terms of helping some of your listeners out and answering their questions. We are an information-first company. We'll answer all the questions. We're not order takers. Certainly, we can take orders, but our business model is one of answering questions, relationship building, and trust. And that's why in $6 billion in transactions and 30 years as a family-owned company, we've never had a customer complaint, ever.
Thank you for that generous offer. It's much appreciated. You know, I really would love to have you come back because I want to, this is an ongoing situation that we all still need to become students of. The fact that you love what you do, and it's not about the money. It's actually about helping people. It just comes across. It just oozes through. I really do appreciate that.
And I appreciate you saying that very, very much. And to me, the way that we accentuate that is by not having order minimums. And we want to help every single person we can protect themselves in whatever way they can. And that's the best way that we're able to do that. We treat everyone the same, whether they want to spend $200 or $2,000 or $200,000. They're all the same to us. And so I thank you for that. I'd love to come back on anytime you need me. Please feel free. Just a phone call away. And I wish you and yours nothing but the best.
Thank you. God bless. And thank you, everybody, for listening to Living in the Solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.